update on two projects that I'm involved in, which are both at very interesting stages of their evolution and their development for two very different reasons. This has been cobbled together very, very recently. I only found out an hour ago that I could talk about the second thing I'm going to talk about. So it's, don't expect something slick when we get into that component. Right.
Could you talk about that first then?
Yeah. Right. So, and those of you...
It's the other stuff.
I'll tell you what, I'll just show up a slide and you can vote on whether or not I talk about it or just move on to the next thing. Right, so this is my equivalent of the slide that Matt showed this morning for the CMB. He showed a picture of the timeline of the universe and how the wonderful physics you can get out from the CMB at each stage. This is my equivalent I've been showing for a number of years, so you probably, most of you have seen it already, about the sort of physics that you can get out from a galaxy survey. So a galaxy survey is a survey of the universe where we're using galaxies to pinpoint the structure more directly. We're doing it at low redshift. So this doesn't refer... Oh, no. The battery's... Oh, it maybe just doesn't show... Oh, it just doesn't show up. Okay.
Yeah.
No. I can do this old school. So,
it's a hockey stick.
No, it doesn't work.
I don't need a hockey stick. I have this arm. Right. Seriously, I'm going to use 10 minutes and I haven't said anything. When I say past, current, and future, I'm referring to the surveys, not any cosmological timeline. Back in the day when I was a postdoc many, many decades ago, galaxy surveys were done in order to measure the linear power spectrum, particularly to measure the matter density of the universe. Then the current and very recent surveys, they started looking at things like barren acoustic oscillations, redshift-based distortions. They were designed to basically understand the overall evolution of the universe and structure within it. And then the future is really looking towards neutrino mass measurements, primordial non-Gaussianity, trying to get hold of the early universe, and looking at lots of interesting physics that goes on small scales. But at the moment, surveys tend to still, or at least this generation that's happening and I'm talking about now, are still a little bit in this era, but I'm going to talk about this era later on. Okay, so the first project I'm going to talk about is DESI. DESI is at a very exciting stage because we have had first light, it is in commissioning. That means all of the bugs are being ironed out and we're about to go into production mode. So DESI is a new fiber-fed multi-object spectrograph for the Mayol telescope. The Mayol telescope is a really weird telescope. When they designed it, someone had a rush of blood to their head and decided they wanted to get above ground effect things. So they built it 14 stories high and have subsequently it's been shown that this did nothing. So they spent a lot of money for no reason, making it more difficult to put things on the telescope and do this. You need huge cranes to do anything. Anyway, this is the Mayol telescope, this is the dome, and then I'm going to show you some pictures, better ones than these, of it being put together. Current best multi-object spectrograph for a galaxy survey is the Sloan telescope. It is a 2.5 meter diameter telescope. It has 1,000 fibers, so it can get 1,000 spectra simultaneously. The Mayol is a 4 meter telescope, so you've got a factor of 4 improvement in speed there, and it has 5,000 fibers, which means it can do 5,000 spectra simultaneously, which means it is 20 times, 4 times 5, faster than Sloan. So Sloan, BOSS survey, all of those surveys, they got 1 million galaxies. DESI is going to get 20 million. So we're going to do 20 million high redshift galaxies, 10 million low redshift galaxies, 600,000 quasars. We're going to basically see the structure in the universe such that it is out to a redshift of around 1.5, cosmic variance limited. That means we will know over the 14,000 square degrees that we can observe from a telescope in the northern hemisphere, everything there is in the universe in terms of the large-scale structure. There are other projects. None of them is as good, as big as DESI, and none of them is on time. DESI is remarkable in that it is on time.
Because that statement, you know, that, I mean, sorry, again. Like the statement that your cosmic bearing is limited, that's a statement that shot noise is negligible compared to.
Yes, that means we're balancing shot noise and cosmic variance out to redshift of 1.5.
Is that your.
For all, yes, all of the scales that we're going to get information from.
Well, I mean, very small scale shot noise dominates some of that. So, but
yeah, okay, so the large scale cosmological information that I'm going to talk about now. Okay. If I make any other non-fully qualified statements, do point them out. DESI is a phenomenal piece of kit, right? These are 1.5 meters pieces of glass. They're special glass. Glass itself, I think, comes from one place in Japan. It is slumped, it is polished to a micron precision of over this 1.5 meters. There are 4 of these go together accurately into their cells, into this optical corrector. They're flown to the skelescope, they're craned 14 stories up, and they are positioned at the top end of the telescope. They focus the light in an achromatic way, so all of the light of all colors is focused on the focal plane. This is about 1 centimeter below the focal plane of the telescope, because the focal plane is designed to be at the ends of all of these fibers. These are a 5,000 micromotor robotic positioners, each positioning one fiber at a known location of a galaxy when the telescope points at a particular patch of the sky. The light is then fed through fiber optic cables being wound here in Durham, 50 meters down to spectrographs in a clean room at the bottom of the telescope. We are now at the stage where we have the top end complete. This is the optical corrector, the focal plane, the positioners and all of the electronics for the positioners, feeding the fiber optic cables, which bring the light down past the telescope, down into the clean room, where there are 10 spectrographs, each one taking 500 fibers. Each one is a 3-arm spectrograph, so it does 3 different chunks of wavelength. It's amazing, it's all in place and it's all working. Because here are some spectra that were taken last week of a redshift 3.7 quasar, a redshift 1.08 emission line galaxy, and a redshift 0.56 luminous red galaxy. These were taken in a 1-hour exposure. So what you've got to think DESI is now going to do is, through a good night of dark time, you can get 8 hours integration on the sky. So it will get 5,000 of these times 8 every night in terms of galaxy spectrum. The resolution of the spectrograph is designed such that we can tell this isn't a single line. This is the O2 doublet. So it's 2 peaks a set distance apart, and that means we can get redshifts of these emission line galaxies very accurately and very quickly based on where that is. So that's all going well. The cosmological predictions, I can go through this in detail, or I can just remind you that I said DESI was a factor of 20 better than we had previously. So the improvement over what we have at the moment is roughly root 20 times what we have. So if you think what we have at the moment in terms of a constraint on, for example, curvature, W, neutrino mass, then basically the improvement that we're going to get with DESI over what we have at the moment is a factor of roughly 4 or so.
7 RSP.
Hmm?
7 RSP for neutrino mass? Or?
Yes, that will be with full shape. Well, this isn't. This is just with BAO. This is with full shape. And then this brings in Lyman alpha.
Sorry, full shape is, what is the?
It's doing a full fit to the whole power spectrum of the galaxies over a full range of scales to K max of 0.1 or 0.2. And then you will get sigma of the summed neutrino mass in EV of, if you push everything, 0.02. And then, as you know, depending on whether you want a normal hierarchy or an inverted hierarchy, this will give you that many sigma detection.
Could you calculate it to get 5 sigma?
No, it just dropped out that way.
Yeah.
Don't talk to me about that. I don't believe any Fisher matrix predictions.
Okay, good.
Okay, so DESI is going really well. First light announcement was in November. Come this May, June, we will move into survey operations, which means basically we will just be churning out a Redshift machine that it will carry on over the next 4 years. Now on to Euclid. Euclid is the second medium mission in ESA Cosmic Vision's program. It was due to launch in 2022, and it might still launch in 2022. It's going up on an Ariane 5, so it's using tried-and-tested Russian... Sorry, not Ariane 5, it's going up on a Soyuz.
Yes.
So it's using tried-and-tested Russian technology. One of the problems is if it doesn't launch in 2022, it won't be going up on a Soyuz, it will be going up on an Ariane 6, because the contract between Europe and Russia finishes at that point. It is a survey telescope. It is designed to cover 15,000 square degrees, which is about the most you can get to without hitting a really high zodiacal light background. That's the light being reflected from the dust in the solar system, or hitting a high stellar density from the Milky Way galaxy. It will do near-infrared photometry and near-infrared slitless spectroscopy to create a broad, wide galaxy survey. It will also do a wideband visible image for weak lensing. As well as this wide survey, it will do a deep survey that we hope to use to calibrate all of the data and understand what it actually is that we've got. So it's a panchromatic survey. It's going to do a visible image, near-infrared imaging, and then it's going to do slitless spectroscopy. Slitless spectroscopy means you put a grism in the optical path of the instrument that disperses all of the light. So instead of seeing blobs, you see small little spectra in your image, like this. In fact, there are three grisms with different orientation in the instrument, and they disperse the light in different ways, such that if you have two nearby sources that might be confused if the light is dispersed one way, they will not be confused if you disperse the light another way. This is important for what I will say later. Even so, we're going to get lots and lots of crummy spectra. One of the things we're going to have to worry about is line misidentification. We can't do what DESI is doing and split the O2 doublet. Instead, we just get broad lines like H-alpha combined with N2, and we may mistake that line for a different line and get the redshift catastrophically wrong. And that's one of the things we're going to test for with the deep field. So the thing that I've only just allowed to tell you about is that in any calculation, you need to make sure that the sign is right. So it's not just enough to get the amplitude of the calculation right, you also need to get the sign right. So here is the telescope. This is a cheat. This is not actually the telescope, the flight model. This is the structural and thermal test model that they put together in order to basically shake it and check nothing drops off, simulating launch. Seriously, it is. They shake it and check nothing drops off. Actually, the flight model, which I couldn't find a photo of in the last 30 minutes, is at about this stage of being put together, but it actually has the instruments in it. So understand what's interesting about Euclid at the moment. Here is the payload that the spacecraft and the telescope are actually taking up into space. Let me get this right. The light comes from the primary mirror up here, hits this mirror onto the dichroic. There it's split. The near-infrared light goes into this instrument, the near-infrared instrument, the visible light gets bounced off here into the visible instrument, so it can do simultaneous visible and near-infrared imaging. Within the near-infrared instrument, here's a blow-up of it, there are two wheels, each of which holds the filters. So for the near-infrared imaging, they would put a broad filter in there, so only H-band or K-band would go through. For the grism observations, they would move a grism into the light path. And there are three different grisms with different orientations that disperse the light in the three different ways. Now, what you need to know is that for structural and, well, for thermal stability reasons, Euclid is an off-axis telescope, which means the secondary mirror is slightly off-axis compared to the whole telescope and satellite, and that makes the thermal properties better. But it makes the design of the optical system a little bit more complicated, because now you have an achromaticity coming into the system that you need to get this 6 degrees, basically blue to red, to be right. And when they designed the grisms, they got the sign wrong. So they needed to have two pieces of software that talked to each other. One designed the whole optical system, the other one actually mechanically worked out what the grisms had to be. And one used one set of coordinates with one axis direction, and the other one used the other. This was not actually realized within the instrument until it was strapped to the telescope, because only then do you actually have the off-axis nature of the telescope coming through to the instrument, building it up. So it just so happens that two of the grisms that align with this off-axis nature of the telescope are fine, because the off-axis nature of the telescope doesn't actually do anything. They were designed with this sign error in them, but that didn't actually change the design a great deal. One of the grisms, however, had a dispersion direction at 90 degrees to this axis of the telescope. And what this means is that the blue light basically is not focused anymore on the detector. So the grism was actually built the 180 degrees the wrong way around. So I have sat on a panel with ESA, and if we can't figure out how to do this quickly, it costs 100 million euros for a year's delay to the satellite. If we could just turn the grism round 180 degrees in the instrument, it would work perfectly. But in order to stop people putting the telescope together wrongly, they only drilled 3 holes in the grism so that you could only put it in one way, so they didn't make a mistake and put it in the wrong way around. The other thing that, if you're ever involved in a satellite mission, you realize is that almost all of the time is spent testing. So to actually build this new component only takes a month or two. But to take the instrument apart carefully, put it in there, carefully put it back together, and test everything again, that's what potentially leads to the delay. So we are currently working out what to do. ESA are very keen that we do nothing, and we just tell them that actually we'll still get the science out. We are not sure about that. We're trying now different things, like just rotating a little bit rather than rotating a lot, just with the amount that we can do things. Okay, so that's the interesting thing that's happening with Euclid at the moment. Provided we can solve this, it basically pushes out in redshift beyond DESI. It's now doing a redshift of 1 to 2, rather than DESI doing a redshift of basically 0 up to 1.4. Okay, how long have I got?
You have got 25, isn't it? 25, so you've got, I think, 3 minutes
okay.
to talk.
All right, so what happens after DESI and Euclid? Well, a lot of people are thinking about it, particularly because the decadal review, the long-range plan, is happening at the moment. If I just did a quick summary here of the US papers that went into the decadal review looking at this kind of spectroscopic instrument and survey, there were 3 papers on current experiments, there were a number of papers on future experiments, and there were a couple of papers that tried to pull everything together into a coherent plan. One of the papers on pulling everything together into a coherent plan was titled The End of Galaxy Surveys, which is a really good title for a decadal review. But what they basically showed, this is the scientific publication year against number of redshifts, and that there's been this exponential improvement in the number of redshifts in the universe that we have up until present. And they were asking the question, does this carry on until we've got a redshift of absolutely everything in the universe we could possibly measure a redshift of? Or does it tail off somehow? Where do we actually carry on in this kind of plot?
Sorry, the trade-off is because of the experimental, not because we're running out.
Yes, okay. Yes, there are this many galaxies out there that we could observe. Yeah.
Are you sure?
Reasonably sure, yeah. Okay. So one of the potential future experiments, and it actually does not push this way, it pushes more this way, is the Mauna Kea Spectroscopic Explorer. It's the idea that we build a new 11-meter class telescope, gaining the improvement from the size of the telescope. The current design does not gain through fiber number, although I'm trying to push them that actually for a relatively small increase in cost, they could really boost this as well. But what you can do with this kind of instrument is really push to a huge volume of the universe. You can push out to get redshifts as a machine, basically in just 1 hour integrations, out to redshifts of 4, basically getting Lyman Break galaxies, Lyman alpha emitters. And then you can get such a huge volume of the universe that you can go after the very early universe looking for large scale bias effects and things like that. Or you can really get, you can easily get 5 sigma on neutrino mass with this much volume of the universe and the growth of structure within. So this survey would be higher redshift, but not larger area. It would not be particularly more galaxies. We'd be looking at about the same number of galaxies as DESI, just at higher redshift over a far larger volume. And this is the plot basically saying that you can get to 5 sigma of neutrino mass with this kind of experiment. It would not happen until the 2030s.
How about FNL? Did you have enough?
Oh, yeah, and FNL. You can get down to FNL of about 1.8 if you believe some of the papers that are out there on the bispectrum and improvements on FNL that you can get with the bispectrum. You can easily get a factor of 4 less than this. So you can get to delta sigma FNL of less than 0.5.
And the neutrino mass is with CMB as 4. So
yes.
On about a decade time scale?
Okay, so I've talked about 2 projects that are happening in the next few years, DESI and Euclid. I've shown you some of the successes and some of the failures. I'm sure we will solve the Euclid one. It's just we're at that interesting stage now that we're just not quite sure how. And the next step after this, it's no longer dark energy. We're going to go after large volumes, other interesting physics. Okay, thank you.